Welcome to the Urban Farmette, where two clueless suburbanites buy a farm, move across the country, and learn along the way. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Sean.
And hi.
Again.
We have now been here in Virginia for 2 weeks today. Well, oh no.
In our house
2 weeks today.
Yeah.
2 week farmers. That's us.
2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And what have we done in 2 weeks?
We've done a lot. I feel like we've done a lot.
I'm sore.
My whole body hurts. We talked about this last week, though. I feel like this is going to be a common
refrain.
No,
we were asleep.
We were tired last week. I don't know if you guys noticed, but we were tired.
And it wasn't even bedtime. But we were tired.
No, yeah.
And I'm sore still.
I know.
I think I've been sore all week.
I was telling my girlfriends today, though, I've been sore since we moved here. I think that my body is shouting, what is all this activity? What's happening?
And you came across a few people or posts or things talking about farm workouts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who needs a gym?
Right. It's true.
Amen. Preach it.
I'm not
kidding.
Who
needs a gym?
I don't see, first of all, where I'd find the time to be able to go to the gym.
I didn't know I owned muscles that are sore right now.
Yeah.
I own them. And the thing is that I feel like I've done hard work. It's not like I paid people to chop down trees or trim trees, not chop down trees, but trim
you
trees.
You did not chop down trees.
No, but that was, I mean.
Yeah.
I enjoy hard work, mm-hmm. and I feel like this is different.
It is. It is, and it's funny to me thinking back when I've heard so many people, especially women, talking about, oh my gosh, in the olden days, people just, they ate meat and potatoes and bread, and why weren't they fat? You know, specifically, you know, generations gone by. And
because I think it's a quarter mile.
It all makes sense. Like,
it's about a quarter mile to take the trash out these
days. They didn't have to, you know, first of all, they probably didn't eat as much. Well, they obviously didn't eat processed foods like we do. But even if they ate just tons of fattening cornbreads and butter and potatoes, they ate 3 squares and then they were out working all day long. And
I work for about an hour a day.
You
not,
mean
not work work?
You mean before working. You got here?
No, here.
You mean on work days?
So I go to work, mm-hmm. and then I come home and I go outside, which is actually much more fun. I enjoy it. As I'm driving home, I'm thinking about what I'm going to do when I get there.
Right.
And it's a fun thought.
Right.
But it's only, honestly, I have
like a 2 hour situation.
Hour on, to two
on,
before
on
dinner.
Yeah.
And then you can't come into dinner
and
filthy. Go back out.
Yeah. You're filthy.
It's, I have a little bit of time, which mm-hmm. is all I need, because in that little bit of time,
you can just,
holy moly, it's, oh, that's a back muscle I didn't know I had.
Well, and the weekends is what kills it, because on Saturdays and Sundays, you know, like the last 2 Saturdays, the second we're up, we're working until it starts getting dark and you don't stop. You don't sit down. You just are working so
There's
hard.
There's just so many things to do.
Yeah. And this weekend on, I think it was Saturday, when we came in and we showered and we were getting the kids ready for bed, we sat down on the couch together for maybe 5 minutes and we couldn't get back up. Like, everything hurt.
I think I crawled to bed.
Yeah. And to just think and gather perspective, people did this as their livelihood and still do, but in greater quantity, people did this for, you know,
this is the
hundreds of years, and they did it every day.
And this is the right size for us. Like, it's not like we bought ourselves 130 acres.
Yeah.
Of land. Not that you could actually work a job and then work 130 acres of land and or homeschool and work 130
acres.
We're
already feeling like it would be difficult to take advantage of everything this land could do with you working. There's just not enough time in the day by the time you get home.
And think about all the projects that we've have done.
Mm-hmm.
They're literally 25 yards away from us right now.
Yeah.
We haven't even gone down the hill.
Yeah.
We haven't visited that building out mm-hmm. there where I think they kept a couple horses. Mm-hmm. We went in there the first day we got there. We haven't been back.
No.
We haven't even gone out that gate since.
We need more time. It just gives you a lot of respect and perspective for farmers who it's their livelihood and they survey and take care of a huge amount of land. I have such a respect for them, and it's hard work. When we work hard, you know.
But it's rewarding because it's for yourself.
Yeah. So we're tired is what we're saying. But we're also on an upswing right now. We're feeling accomplished. We've accomplished some different projects we have started. So that's good. But it's only been 2 weeks and we're still just riding this wave. So happy to be here.
But that's a good point because I wanted to say that it sounds bad. It sounds like we're sort of in a concentration camp, but we just got up from the couch mm-hmm. saying, you know, we're going to go, let's go record. And we were talking about how happy we were.
Yeah.
And that's the cool part about it is that it sounds horrible, but it's not.
I don't think it sounds horrible.
I think it sounds horrible. Well, I think we made it sound horrible right there just now.
No, it's just work. Yeah. I think that, but that's the sad part is that physical work and energy sounds horrible to people. Maybe that's what's the sad part, not so much the work.
Well, it sounded horrible to me. I mean, when you say work, that's like it's almost a negative sounding word.
Well, I think perhaps because we didn't talk about it with the reward. I think that there's an inherent reward in physical labor when it's on your own property and you're doing something that contributes to your family. You're taking care and being a good steward of God's earth. Yeah. You're growing things.
That's
you're
exactly
working
how,
with the
yes.
land the way it should be worked. And you're also, you know, benefiting from being outside in God's creation, teaching your kids about God's creation and what.
And you're surrounded by it.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
It's absolutely amazing. So, you know, I was talking with my friend Rachel this week, who also owns a farm out in Washington. And she was saying, it's a different type of busy. There's different types of busy. And people who don't farm can sometimes look at people who do. And we're not farmers by any stretch.
Yet,
babe. But
I was searching tillers just before.
You were.
I mean, like large scale tillers. Like looking at, four blades. No. Yeah. That's not enough.
But I think that it's easy. You know, we came from a very concentrated environment where everybody was busy all the time. And she mentioned that when she tries to explain the amount of work that her and her husband do to people who don't live in that environment, their first, you know, assumption and sometimes comment is, oh my gosh, you're so busy. There's so much work to do. You're always busy doing. And she has to realize that it's just a different type of busy.
It's a very enjoyable busy.
Yeah. And it's busy, you know, everybody's busy with what is important to them. But I think it's so great that we're able to be busy doing things that we're hoping will ultimately benefit our family and our children and what they're learning about the world and eventually benefiting our community as a whole and how we can get involved with the space God has us living in, how we can contribute to those around us, and, you know, find out different avenues that we can contribute. It's a busy life because there's always a project on a piece of property like this. There's always going to be a new garden you want to dig or a new animal you want to buy or some kind of idea of what could benefit the greater good, which is awesome.
May lead into what you wanted to talk about when we were discussing the topics.
Well, what were we going to talk about?
Honestly,
no, what were we going to talk about tonight?
It kind of plays. Well, you said I said it last week, but I'm going to kind of revisit the idea of taking your time.
But what was the initial thing we were going to talk about tonight that was totally put on the back burner?
I have no idea.
What was our title going to be? What was the title you came out
chickens.
With? Yeah. Don't count your chickens. Because our entire podcast episode tonight was supposed to be about the chickens that we were supposed to get today.
And we were
going to
make the Polly noise.
Aww, they're so cute. Chickens. Aww. But we were supposed to get chickens today, and we didn't. And so we had to have a discussion with our kids about. Yeah, we had to have a discussion about being patient, which actually has been a common refrain and something we've been saying a lot to both ourselves and to our kids, and is something that I think that the farm will ultimately teach us the most about, honestly.
So I have a ritual in the morning. Not a ritual. It's kind of a something that I started doing before we left in the process of on my way to work, I pray while driving, eyes open, obviously.
Hopefully.
But I'm having a conversation with God, and since being here and driving to work, while saying how awesome it is and amazing the blessings we've been given, and everything like that, I'm being inundated with thoughts about things that I want to do and need to do and want to accomplish and achieve. And the list starts growing and your mind just starts going and wandering, and you suddenly have a super long list of things you feel like you need to accomplish and do. And that whole idea of patience and just take a breath, take a second, and realize what you have and what you're doing and what's around you and what you can do before you start just jumping into things and projects. And when I was looking at land and reading farming books and gardening and planting and everything like that, when we got here, I wanted to buy a tiller right away and just start grinding into the land.
Right.
But there's a whole bunch of things in that. And what I'm learning here is that the process and planning is so much better because we did a very small project with getting that garden, the three garden plots.
Yeah, you may have seen, she had used them as, vegetable beds, and they left them. They're just little teeny cutouts of their garden surrounded by
grass,
but they're hedged in by rock, basically. I don't know if those are bricks or stone, whatever. But
and
she
these
left
are things
them
that anyone could have in any garden anywhere in the world.
Yeah,
it's not a big piece of land. It's a very small thing. It's right outside the garage.
We decided to start really
small.
We
wanted to start there, and what I learned from that process of just cleaning it up, making it our own, planting a few things. What I learned in that whole thing is that it took 3 days. I dug the grass out to make, put like little sawdust walkways there so we can walk around.
Looks
it.
Looks really good.
And it's a very small piece of land that everyone has.
Literally everybody in Southern California.
They have it.
Yeah.
They have this size.
You have this size.
And then some in your backyard. And it took me, over the course of probably 4 days,
an hour
at a time, digging this stuff up. And I was sitting there, reflecting on it. I do a lot of reflection on my labor, post labor in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing there going, gosh, I don't feel like I accomplished a whole bunch. But what I realized was that everything that we're doing here is long term.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing. And we took our time.
Yeah.
And we it's not like we built these gardens by themselves, but we took our time and looked at what we were going to plant. Even though we wanted a quick reward, especially for the kiddos, as far as gardening goes, because it's good for them to see things grow.
Yeah.
But I looked at this small piece of land and took a lot of time in figuring out what I wanted to do. And it is going to be for the long term. That thing's probably going to be there forever.
Yeah.
And that's the cool thing about it, is that when you sit down and reflect, and this goes in a lot of different aspects, and it goes for anyone, anywhere.
Yeah.
When you sit down and reflect on something, take your time and look at it for the long term.
Which is not something that I think that I'm naturally good at. I am by nature, a go-getter. So when I see something I want to change and do, I just jump in and I go and I do it. And that pays off in a lot of ways. But in a lot of ways, it has definitely fed my impatience, and I'm learning. I mean, we've only been here 2 weeks, but I've seen countless things in the 2 weeks where I've wanted to rush through something to just have it happen. as opposed to...
I wanted a fully sustainable farm.
Well, yeah, of course, but that's
In your mind, in your mind's eye, it's like, I'm going to go towards this direction.
And it's not going to happen like that. And it shouldn't. No. And I think that this lifestyle promotes a very sensible style of waiting and learning that waiting is also very good because you learn, you grow in discernment, you have time to think about things, and you also have time to appreciate the process. I am learning things by trial and error, but also learning by just not having what I want immediately. And I think that it's different. It was different where we were living before. I was more prone to immediate and quick satisfaction and gratification because I could order anything I wanted and have it delivered ASAP. I can drive to any Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, Sprouts, get any vegetables and fruit and herbs I need as soon as possible. Everything's at my fingertips, and it is to an extent here, but it's also not. We don't have as much stuff.
But that's not what we want.
Right. Necessarily. But it's not even what we can necessarily have. True. I can't just go, oh yeah, I need basil. I'm just running to Trader Joe's right now to get some, to buy $3.49 plant.
Running to town. And yes, I said that, going to town.
Yeah.
It takes
25 minutes to, yeah. And that's to Target or Costco. But right. If we want to find a more specialty store, like a Whole Foods or Trader's, that's going to be 45 minutes, 50 minutes.
Right.
And so I'm looking at things long-term, you know, we want this lifestyle. We love this lifestyle for ourselves and our children. We love the community we're being born into right now. And to have some of the benefits and luxuries that we had back home, like, you know, fresh vegetables and fresh herbs. We can go to the farm stand down the street, but it has limited quantities. We can go to the farmers markets on the weekend, which we'll actually talk about later, or we can grow it ourselves. But that's going to take time, and it's going to take research, and it's going to take patience. And patience is what we're learning from the farm right now. That's what our farm is teaching us.
And part of that experience for me was the slowing down and not just speeding through
just the process. Just in general.
You got 3 tomato plants from someone?
Yeah, a nice neighbor. Actually, it's someone I don't even know. Another neighbor Facebook messaged me and said, hey, my friend has a bunch of tomato plants left over. Would you like them? And I said, yes, I would. And they just ended up on my doorstep. I was gone, and I came home, and there they were. And
so we go to plant these, and we want to put them next to or in a space that they would thrive.
Yeah.
And we figured next to those little garden beds would mm-hmm. be a great place for it. So mm-hmm. we start digging, and we realize there's a lot of rocks and clay.
Yeah, it's dark clay. Red.
And,
yeah.
And it's not something that we've seen before or anything like that. But instead of what we would have done, which is just whatever, dig it up and put them in and hope for the best, mm-hmm. we looked at that and go, this is interesting. What is this? What is this? Yeah. Can these grow here?
Right.
And... one of the coolest things that I've realized since we've been here and since we started this is the community that we've kind of established, or you're establishing better than me because I'm not a social media guy, but you immediately took a picture of what we were encountering mm-hmm. and threw it out there saying, what is this?
Yeah, on Instagram. Can we grow
it? And before we dropped those tomato, it was Instagram, mm-hmm. before we dropped those tomato plants in the ground, you posted that asking, can we put these here?
Right.
And a slew of messages came in saying,
this is where you look. This is what it is. It's Virginia clay.
It's Virginia clay. Yeah, everything was saying, and here's how to, like, not only just, it's what it is and you're fine. It's kind of, it is what it is here, but also do this to help.
Here's what you do. Here's what I did.
Here's what I do. And here, and we had multiple opinions about it.
And what did you say? You said, social media and Instagram is better than Google.
That's better than Google. And it's better than Google in the sense of we could have just Googled it and read about it from random people that we didn't know or people that say they're experts and, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth and just gone with that. But the cool thing about the social media community that you're building is we had people actually looking at our land and commenting mm-hmm. back based on what they saw.
Well, super helpful telling us about their experiences.
But they care about us in the sense of, well, we want you to succeed and here's what we did.
Well, and they've done it for everything. Social media has been so wonderful through this process because people are telling us things we don't know. And that's one, you know, piece of advice I'd give anybody doing something like this. This is totally be vulnerable, because I think, especially in the social media world, we all want to, you know, give off this, I don't know, I feel like there's so much of this, I know what I'm doing, I'm an expert, and there's something so just wonderful about people who are vulnerable, and that's what you and I are trying to be through all this, is we really don't know what we're doing.
We have no idea.
And we're definitely not ashamed or afraid to say that, because it's opened up such an avenue to learn from people who know what they're doing and can help us, and so that we can also help other people when it comes time. And that's been wonderful. And so thank you to everybody who has commented and given us help, especially with the chicken situation. So many people are giving us so much advice about that and about,
yes, thank gardening. You for adding to my task list.
Yeah,
all
really.
These different things I need to
do. I'm like, Sean, go back outside. Someone told me we need to do this.
Build a scarecrow.
Yeah.
Or two. Or eight.
But it has been wonderful. And it's added to our enjoyment. But it's also, again, helping us to do things the right way. Slow down. Mm-hmm. Like we're talking about. Exactly. Be patient. And
the thing for me was, what that taught me was, one, what it looks like now, because I finished it today. Applause to me.
Yes, you did a good job.
What it looks like now is probably nowhere near what it would have looked like without that advice. Mm-hmm. And they're probably going to, the tomatoes are going to thrive.
Yeah.
Right there, because of what people told us.
Yeah.
We should do.
Yeah.
And what it taught me was the patient side of it. Just wait for the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the long term.
Yeah.
And it's all about building for the long term. And that goes into a lot of the reasons why we're here, is we're not here to revolutionize anything. We're here to learn. We're mm-hmm. here to grow.
Yeah.
And these people are so, I mean, they're amazing.
Yeah.
The comments you're getting are amazing. And I was standing there with a shovel just waiting for answers.
Yeah.
And they came in within 3 to 4 minutes.
Well, and it's so great too, because it's people who live here. They know. And again, being vulnerable has been such a gift, because, you know, it could be easy to brand we're moving, we're going to be farmers, we know what we're doing, and we just don't. And that's great, because we can ask for help and people are so ready to share, and it's been wonderful. So
it's
that's
become
been
a good, it's
great.
Become a really good life lesson for me, and not just the farming side of things, but, I'm prone to not asking questions.
No.
I want. Why,
not
why do you say
you.
That? Really? Come on.
I just feel like I have to play the antagonist here.
Yeah. And you would know better than anyone. I like to be right. I like to know what I'm talking
You're
about.
You're not. It's not that you like to be right.
I like to act like I know.
What's the word I always call you?
Can we say that on.
No, you're
us.
Contrary.
We're not explicit. I'm contrary.
You are.
What does that mean, though?
Like, I'll say something like, oh, the. I don't know. I can't give a good example.
I tell you when you're wrong.
It's not that you know. You never say you're wrong. You offer
the right answer,
a more correct answer,
yes,
and you make
I
sure
do.
That I understand it's correct.
It's called,
and it's
that's
about
called knowledge transfer.
No, but it's about the stuff that doesn't matter too.
It matters
like,
to me.
I know it does. But like, oh my gosh, look at how beautiful the ocean is right now. That color of blue, and then Rachel.
That's gray.
Yeah, and that's
and
when I lose my mind, because
and
it's
probably
not
needles
even
in it.
It's not even important stuff when it comes to the really important stuff. You kind of are very quiet. You listen. It's good. You listen to other people. You yeah. take it in. But when it's about the stuff, like about, I don't know.
See, this is all in
the
your
last
head. You can't
leap
even think
year.
About it.
I don't know. Then you're like adamant about
being right.
Yes. So you're a little bit contrary sometimes.
I am, but
it's okay.
I've slowed down a bit in that I don't.
In the
know
last
anything.
2 weeks
and,
that
well,
you become
then,
a farmer,
well, no, you have maybe. But the cool part is that I went to buy straw at TSC.
Yeah, because we were supposed to get chickens
today.
I know. We didn't.
And I had no idea what I was doing. Mm. And I knew I had to get feed, and I grabbed the 50-pound bag of feed over my shoulder, and I threw it on the counter.
Did you buy a 50-pound bag of chicken starter feed, though?
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to go through 50 pounds. They're babies.
We have 15 plus 20 guineas.
They going to go through that much? They do eat a lot, I heard.
Yeah.
See? Again, don't know.
We'll find out.
We will.
I threw it down on the counter, and I'm like, I also need two bales?
Bushels? Straw? What is it?
And she goes, well, what kind do you want? I'm like,
straw?
The yellow kind?
See, that's your embarrassing.
But the cool part about this whole thing is, and I feel much more manly about this, is that I ordered it. I went through my embarrassing moment of asking the TSC checkout
girl
who knew more about what I
she was like 12 and she's
saw
like,
that
okay,
I got chicken
farmer.
Starter, so obviously I'm a starter. She gave me the right stuff, and I bought it, and I went out to my truck, and I was waiting for the guy to deliver the straw to me, and he's walking out with a straw, and he looks at me, looks at the truck. This is the cool moment for me, where he goes, this must belong to you.
Oh, you had a farmer moment.
I had the look.
But you,
I looked like the guy that needed two bales of straw, instead of the guy who was dressed up in his, which is what I usually would be. No offense to
that's
anyone.
That's what you got made fun of for wearing.
The dress up shirt and slacks, ordering dog food. Like, that guy was checking out in front of me. Mm-hmm. Like, if this guy was delivering straw, it would not be to the guy in the dress up.
Was that a moment for you?
I was in my work boots, my jeans, a dirty shirt, my TSC hat. So I'm obviously sporting. I've been here
before.
You
were representing.
I've been here before. He came up to me and said, this must be for you. And I was like, yeah, it is.
You had some guy carry out your straw for you. You couldn't carry out your own straw.
Oh, no. He had to wheel it out because it's so heavy.
No, it wasn't.
And then I grabbed
Kensington
it. I grabbed it
pen.
For him, and I said,
right.
Let me help you with that, because I do this all the time. But that's the thing, is that it was a good moment for me of, one, I have no idea what I'm doing,
right.
But two, I'm getting there.
You will get there.
I'm getting
there. We will get there. We're frauds right now, but we're on our way.
We're acting.
We are. We're learning. We're not acting. We're learning.
We're learning. But that's hard for someone that's always felt like they know.
No, we don't know.
I'm in an environment where I don't know, and I have to be okay saying,
yeah,
excuse me, 16-year-old girl, what straw am I? What do you think?
No, why don't you tell me what straw I need?
What do you think I need right now?
She's like, stupid.
Yeah.
I've known this since I was 6.
Yeah. She probably lives in the suburbs somewhere.
That's totally going to be Kay and Frankie when they're working at TSC.
Yeah.
When some
that's my dream.
New farmer comes in.
I would love
in.
For my girls to work the counter at TSC.
Well, no, you saw the face the girl
discounts.
At Tractor Supply gave to us the first week we were there when we went in to go buy something.
Oh, we were probably all
California. And we were telling her about California. She's like, that explains it. She totally got it. She's like,
that's why you're buying the horsey statues for your girls.
Exactly.
Because they know nothing of it. The stuff that's been on the sale rack for 4 months.
This is the closest to horses they're ever going to get, this horse doll.
But there were a lot of firsts. I think there were other firsts that we had.
Other firsts this week, we had propane delivered to our house, totally different than Southern California.
We have 1,000-gallon tank
of propane
buried in the driveway.
And we had to pay dollar bills for that. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But it'll last us for how long? A year? I hope.
Well, knowing the way you use heaters.
Oh my gosh, we're not even going to get through like October. We're going to have to come back
out. I put the heaters on right now, even though it's 80
degrees
outside.
No, it's not. The air conditioning is, though. 70 degrees, set at it.
Thank goodness the air conditioning is not propane powered.
Whatever. Have you seen my hair this week? The air needs to be on. It is crazy.
But
this humidity is nuts.
I mean, it was cool because they came in and a very nice family-owned company walked around and said, where's all your gas? I'm like, you tell me. I know things, but not that much. Mm-hmm. They drove a truck up, filled this giant metal tin, which is underneath the driveway, which still frightens me a bit.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
But there's no earthquakes here, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's a little weird. And we had another first this week. We went to the dump.
We went and delivered our trash because that's what you do here.
Delivered our trash.
There is no trash pickup.
How cool was that?
Well, cool is...
I'm going to do it again.
A word. Well, we're going to have to because you have to weekly. Take your trash weekly and your recyclables. You have to do that yourself. So we had to go to the landfill and drop off.
Just compost everything. Well, see, I came here thinking our dump runs would be once a month because we would burn or compost
and
everything.
We do both of those things a lot now. I never have composted before, ever.
But you still have so much trash.
Yeah, well, and it's trash. A lot of that, though, I think is us moving in. Trash. I hope so, because I don't want to have that much trash. But we're trying to recycle as much as we can, and we're trying to compost as much as we can. But no matter what we do, we're in charge of taking it somewhere, which is totally different ballgame than Southern California, which also makes you more aware of what you're disposing of and what you can reuse and what you need to recycle. So that's good.
And what you purchase.
Yep. So that's another first. What were some of the other firsts? The propane, the
farmer's market.
Ah, we went to our first farmer's market here in Virginia and we loved it.
It was tiny.
It was tiny, but they said that there's a larger one in the town of Leesburg proper that we're going to go to, and they have like 50 vendors and it was huge. But what was great about it, as opposed to some of the
buffalo.
Yeah. As opposed to some of the farmers markets we have frequented and visited in Southern California, is that we met the actual farmers at this farmers market. We talked to four different farmers that were representing their farm at the farmers market, who are the sole farmers at their, or not the sole farmers, but
the cool one, I thought.
He was fifth generation farmer.
The older guy was cool, who's all their families
nine
live on the
kids
farm,
and they all run the farm together, which is insane and amazing.
Everybody works the farm.
Yep. And then we met a fifth generation farmer.
Yeah, that guy was really cool because it was he's the fifth generation that owns the farm. He's the first one
to ever do farmers markets.
Do a farmer's market.
Yeah, he was selling some amazing stuff. We bought eggs from him. But that was what was cool. A lot of the farmers markets we've been to had reps that would come or people who worked on the farm.
Not the owners.
And we got to meet several different, the primary owner of the farm, which was amazing
Pretty
to talk
much
with
all
them.
All of them were.
Yeah. The and primaries. They were some of the nicest people we've ever spoke with.
It's wanted, very inspiring.
They wanted to talk with us. They wanted to see about what the land we got, and
they wanted us to visit them so we could see what they do.
They offered to take us on tours, take our kids on tours, teach us things, just very kind. And what was also great was that these are people whose their livelihood is farming, and they, some of them owned relatively for Virginia or for, you know, a state that has a lot of farmland. They own smaller lots of land. The people that we talked to for a while only owned 19 acres, and you know, that's relatively small for here and for family owned and operated
and
fully
sustainable
farms. Yeah. They're owning 50 and 60 acres, and these people own 19, and it's their livelihood and it's wonderful. And it reminds you that you just don't need to have an enormous farm to make an enormous difference, because these farmers are, you know, providing just wonderful and healthy and nutritious food for a community.
That lettuce that we got from that guy was
delicious. And, yeah. And lots of the food is just, you know, food in general is cheaper here, but, than in Southern California, but it's, you know, equally delicious and less expensive for healthy food.
And the thing that gets me, and Joel Salatin talks about this a lot, is the local side of it.
Yeah,
we actually drove further to go to the farmer's market than these farms are to where we live.
Yeah, from our house. Yeah.
Like the water buffalo folks in Lovettsville is probably less than 10 miles away from here. And we drove about 15 miles to the farmer's market.
Yeah.
It is that close
yeah.
to us.
And we live by... you know, I joined a group for our little town on Facebook, and I asked a question about swim classes, and I had a bunch of people, oh my gosh, I'm from Southern California too. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I had a bunch of people say, oh, I'm
you know, welcome to the neighborhood. I own a farm. My family and I own a farm up the street. Bring your girls. We'll give you a tour. Bring your girls. I'd love them to ride some of our horses. Just, you know, there's farms everywhere.
Everywhere.
So that's really, really great. And it was inspiring to meet the farmers and hear their stories and hear how they're using their farm to, you know, impact our community for good. But
and
also,
these stands weren't large. I mean, they were 1 6-foot table, and they had all of their
very
goods
modest
and coolers,
and
they were selling
humble.
What they could, and
that was their Saturday.
And that was their Saturday.
Yeah, and it was amazing to see them. These are
and I want to do that.
Yeah, it was great.
And what it taught me was that they started somewhere.
Yeah.
And some of them maybe fifth generation and this
no,
is
but
their
the
first
one
thing.
Guy said he started in 2005 or six. Yeah. I mean, it's not long ago, which is great. And he gave up his day job and started this farm with his family.
And they're doing this on the weekend. Like, we can do this.
Yeah.
Type of thing. That was neat. I would encourage people anywhere to not just go to the farmers market and support your local farms, but talk with them.
Get to know them.
And, mm-hmm. and you will be inspired by a lot of the stories that they tell. You'll be inspired to do it yourself. And you could sit there and say, I only have a backyard.
Yeah.
But you can make it a sustainable, not sustainable. Well, probably, you know, what's that one?
You
what's
can do a lot. Book, well, we were going to talk about our favorite books, but there's a great book,
Compact
and we'll link
Farms.
To it in the show notes. Compact Farms by Volk is amazing, talking about how you can make a sustainable garden on less than 5 acres, but even
on like
a quarter acre, half acre.
Yeah, he started on like 0.15 acres, which is essentially in Southern California. It would have been maybe our backyard.
But we know people who make, my friend Jen has a garden in her backyard, and her backyard is, you know, probably, I want to say, like, it's bigger than average because it's kind of on two lots, but she does amazing stuff on a small scale and harvests a lot and is very intentional. And this can be done. You don't have to have a farm to do this. So I'll link to that book, Compact Farms. Just it's good for inspiration.
Very much.
But
so.
I think our idea of farming is so, especially if coming from SoCal, is just, oh, we have to, it has to be big. And
yeah.
It just, that's proving to us that first of all, it doesn't have to be to feel very gratified with your work and satisfied, but we have to think outside the box. You don't need a humongous space.
I think of Brian and April and what they're starting up in their front yard.
Yeah, April's totally
yard.
A farmer. I mean, it's amazing. She has not only cut flowers, but vegetables and fruit. It's not just about the yield to me. It's about the amount of knowledge that she has. Mm-hmm. She knows a lot about what she's doing, and it's been a process. And that's what I like about April, is she's slow to do these things. She doesn't hurry and do them. She's methodical and she thinks about things. And so her knowledge grows, and she just has so much, you know, it's like a fountain of kind of like, you know,
and a big
ever
part of
growing
that is that
over the
she
years.
She knows her land.
Yeah.
And what grows.
And it's been
a
process for her.
And
she just learns.
It's inspiring in the sense of, you can see these farmers who are years down the road.
Yeah.
They all started in that understanding. And,
right.
And it's kind of, and the inspiring part in talking to these guys was, well, that's kind of what we're doing, is learning what our land is like.
Yeah.
And seeing it, feeling it,
mm-hmm.
turning it over and
seeing,
what's underneath.
Yeah.
Don't just jump in and just go.
Yeah.
It's you learn those things, and then it will thrive.
Well, and it seemed to me too, the common thread between all of the different farmers we spoke with was the theme of family. Every single one of them worked with their families. It was a family affair and multi-generational.
Yep.
And it was important to them. I mean, that's what the one farmer who has the larger farm, that we were speaking with, that was what he led with, was, yeah, my wife and I have 9 kids, and we homeschooled, and it's always been this way. We've always worked the farm together.
And everyone works the farm
and wants to.
And they were at, he was saying
they were at multiple farmers markets that day.
He wasn't planning on working, but ended up at this one because they needed someone to cover it.
And but it just, it was the
patriarch.
Yeah. Of the whole thing. Oh yeah. Him and his wife. He
was working the smallest farmer's market I've ever seen.
Just the nicest guy. And talking about how, you know, the farm has been, it started with the grandparents and it's just, it's snowballed and it's fallen all the way down to his grandkids and they all spend days on the farm together. And it's just such a beautiful vision for a very holistic approach to growing as a family and also, learning as you go together, not just, you know, a singular pursuit, but just as a family doing this all as one, which has been wonderful.
So this is a very inspiring, this is a podcast episode where you guys are kind of seeing how we're getting inspired and it's happening quickly. I mean, I understand that we're,
well, you can't drive here without being inspired. Yeah, you're just looking out at what people are doing. We've been inspired
for a good amount of time before, even before we got here.
Oh yeah.
But what you're seeing now is kind of the evolution of that inspiration and what it's doing to us just being here and understanding the process and understanding what it actually means. I think the cool thing about going to those markets is that we feel inspired in a different way. It's not inspired to go grab my shovel and chuck my land and rent a till and till it and plant seeds tomorrow. It's, what it inspired me to do was think of the future and the long term and what that means for the next generation, my kids, what will they inherit? So when I go and till my land in the next month, I'm going to think about plotting out the land and what Rachel, you were saying, like we need to sketch out how we're going to do this because what we do now will impact what it looks like in 5 years, what it looks like when our girls are grown up and what the land is able to do for them.
Yeah.
If we start now and that slows you way down, that hits the brakes. Like you hit the brakes really hard and going, I need to think about this.
Well, and what's the ultimate goal? If the ultimate goal is just to grow things, we can kind of do that in lots of different ways.
Grow it on my counter.
Yeah. But if the ultimate goal is to create an atmosphere where we can all work together, we can concentrate on one specific space, which is the land we've been given. And maybe a goal is to eventually be full-time farmers for the benefit of our family and our kids and generations to come. You can think about those things a little bit more broad, which is what I like doing, as opposed to an immediate result type of, you know, what are we going to do right now? What would satisfy my farmer itch right now to, okay, let's just go plant something. And taking a wider lens when looking at it and being patient. And that's what I think we're taking away right now from the farm, is it's teaching us to be patient. Okay. So we're going to add a new segment to our podcast and it's a Q&A. We're going to make it real quick, but we get tons of questions all the time, especially on Instagram. Only on Instagram because that's the only social media the Urban Farmette's on right now. But we got a question today and we'll give a quick answer. Someone was asking, are you guys full-time farmers or does your husband work outside the farm? And real quick answer is,
oh, I definitely work outside the farm.
Yeah. It's not full-time for us.
Full-time farmer.
Would you like to be?
I'm a 1/100th of a farmer right now. Yes, I would love to be.
Wouldn't that be great?
No, but I work a full-time job and I do as much as I possibly can when I get home to further this. But right now we're in the research stage. Eventually, yes.
Yeah.
I would love to be a full-time farmer.
Okay. And then one other question and then continue sending them because we'll add them to the end of each of our podcasts is, how are your girls liking the farm? And I would say to that they are loving it. It is a complete culture change from more of the busy go of, you know, quote unquote city life, having all of this space, but then also having a lot more time because we came to a whole new state. We don't have activities and, you know, the embedded friendships and things like that where we're busy every single night with something. So there's just that lull right now where we're not doing anything except for just being together, being on the farm and doing every night. But they definitely are just falling right into the groove. And really, I think loving it. It's a totally different lifestyle. Yeah. It's something I can't even explain, but it's totally different.
I would answer that in really quickly in two ways. And both of them happened tonight. We were outside and I was finishing up the beds.
And they were lighting a fire.
They were able to play with matches. Yes, kids playing with matches. Lighting a fire in the fire pit. It's all contained. I'm right there. No one worry about it. Please don't call
anybody.
They were able to light a fire, play with matches, build wood, put paper on things. Kay was making a torch. And then at the same time, they heard a noise in the forest
in the
area,
woods, yeah,
which they thought sounded like a wolf howl. So they started howling back. Mm-hmm. And immediately I'm sitting there digging the thing going, guys, don't be so loud. The neighbors awake. guys, don't light the fire. It's going to be... it's not going to burn. So I was able to let my kids play with fire in a bonfire size thing, lighting it up.
And howl at the moon.
And howl at the woods.
My gosh, what homeschoolers.
And all of my muscles in my body tensed up every time they howled going...
Yeah, because we're programmed to... Yeah.
You can't play with fire.
Right.
Like it's a freedom. And I thought to myself, why am I telling them to stop? One, because it was really annoying. That's why I wanted to tell them to stop. But I didn't. And I wanted to tell them, like, here's how you should light the fire.
Nope.
But I didn't. Just let them use 1800 matches to set a paper on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's freedom.
Yeah.
And they have the freedom to do it, and they're not going to hurt anything. They're not going to hurt anybody. There's no one around to be annoyed with them. It was just complete freedom. And that, to me, is you can see it in their faces when they were doing those things. They look over at me, and I just continued digging.
Mm-hmm.
So they continued making noise.
Yeah.
That's going to pay off years down the road.
Yeah, they're loving it. So thank you for the questions, guys. And in the show notes, we're going to link to a couple of the books that we've really enjoyed and that we have felt have benefited us so far in the beginning stages of farming. One of them is with the title Barnheart by Jenna Wogenrich. I'm not sure if I've mentioned her before or not, but it's really sweet. It's a great memoir. Another book is by the author, I forget her first name. It might be Nancy Ziegler, called Vegetables Love Flowers. My friend April gave it to me, but there's also a great podcast, which I'll link to in the show notes, that she was featured on. And it's just talking about how you can plant vegetables and flowers together to cross-pollinate, and they're really beneficial to one another. And then one book that Sean's really been enjoying is Compact Farms by, I think his first name is Josh, but his last name is Volk. Yeah, it's Josh Volk. And it's great for anybody looking to start thinking about or being inspired by small space gardening. And when we say small, it's less than 5 acres. So that's still very, very large to some people, but you can kind of get ideas on a smaller scale, whether you're in the country or in the city. So I will link to all of those in the show notes. And like we've said, you can always find us on Instagram at The Urban Farmette, or head over to the blog and check out our show notes. And next week, we're hoping to podcast about what?
Chickens.
We're hoping to get chickens in the next day or two.
I hope I don't hurt the chickens.
Well, I'm nervous. They're small.
I don't know anything about chickens.
I don't. We know some things. We've been learning.
I don't think I've ever held a chicken.
How is that? You've never held a baby chick or a regular sized chicken?
I've shooed big chickens.
Okay. Well, I have to say this. I'm just going to say this. You need to not be so
mean,
girly about you're so girly when it comes to animals. Cats
are stupid.
No, they're not. Ugh. They're not stupid, and you are so afraid of them. Like, you make me get the cat.
I will love chickens more than cats. I guarantee
I can guarantee that you're gonna be filled with such trepidation when you have to pick up a chicken. No, you'll be like, oh
no, not worried about it. Cats are just, they have this look.
Okay. Well, you have time. It's just little chickies. You can't get afraid of the chickies.
I won't be afraid of chickies.
You've never held a baby chick?
I don't think so. Maybe as a kid.
Well, we're supposed to get him in a day or two. So next week we will be talking to you.
All 15.
We're getting Are we getting 16? We're getting a rooster. You get a rooster. You get to name the rooster. We're getting chickens.
He's gonna sleep with us.
Absolutely no chickens in the house. No.
That's dirty.
Huh? I'm anti. Some people are pro chickens in the house. I'm anti.
Chickens in the house.
No chickens in the house. No chickens. But we're getting chickens.
Fried chicken in the house.
For show. We're getting chickens and we're getting guinea fowls delivered in the next couple weeks. Guinea fowls are in July, but soon we're getting our baby chicks. So hopefully next week we'll share with you that experience of the new farmers getting their first batch of chickens. So look out for that. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.